Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm feeling a little perky today because I wasn't up all night getting the audio into the WNST and Baltimore Positive audio vaults and onto the air and up all night with media access and free cheese puffs out in Owings Mills. But Luke Jones was out doing that, and he'll be with us on Friday at Fadley's at 2 o'clock. I don't know that he's doing baseball. He's doing draft. We have one press credential for one person and two people. I'll get into that as my review continues with the Rubenstein family. If you have not seen our 25th anniversary documentary, No One Listens, Everyone Hears, it is now readily available and being consumed sometimes. And a few things to promote here. First things first. At Fadley's, we're going to have the Pac-Man giveaways. Of course, our friends at Liberty Pure. Big thanks to Doug Workman and those folks there for keeping my water clean, making me feel healthy and alive at 55. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare for now being an annual sponsor, one-year sponsor, and for keeping the motor oil in the vehicle clean so I can do fun things like go see the Black Crowes at Radio City Music Hall. Luke, first things first, you were up late Thursday night. They pick late. You wish they picked it about 11:53 because that would have meant they won the Super Bowl, right, instead of at 11:40. And things start falling and quarterbacks. The Atlanta Falcons thing was wacko, right? Like all of the things that happen, 30 dramas, 29 dramas, plus the commissioner getting booed by 150,000 people in Detroit. Shout out to Mike Rosenfeld, We were represented in Detroit. Our chief digital officer, Mike Rosenfeld, was there, so he'll be there for that. And I dropped the documentary, and I've aged dramatically in the last 6 weeks, and so have you, according to the film, at least. You were cute when you came aboard here. You were like 19 years old or something, weren't you? How are you? Are you up late doing all the things you're doing? How's Eric DaCosta? How are John Harbaugh? Haven't seen them lately.
I think they're happy. I think you look at how this draft played out, and we talked about it throughout over these last few months. Not that you and I did a ton of heavy lifting as it pertained to previewing the draft, especially with the baseball team that's amongst the very best in the majors. But we talked about this idea that when you're picking 30th, you can have a range of players that you're hoping will be there. You can try to project out as much as you can, but depending on how it's going to go. And we saw some strange things in this draft. I mean, you mentioned Atlanta, which I still can't wrap my head around why you sign Kirk Cousins and then draft a quarterback as early as you do when you have a very distinct window with Kirk Cousins. But hey, the Atlanta Falcons also thought they were good. They didn't need to pursue Lamar Jackson last offseason when they were one of the few teams that felt like they had a set of circumstances that maybe it would work. Anyway,
let me just interject that the Philadelphia Eagles did some, like, nobody did anything wackier with quarterbacks than them, and they went to Super Bowls and won one.
This is way wackier than that. Okay, they drafted Jalen Hurts. Carson Wentz already wasn't trending in a good direction.
I'm going back two quarterbacks ago. I'm talking about when they had the logjam with the Bradford Wentz. Like, when they went through all of that, they came out of that and won a Super Bowl 2 years later. I'm just saying. I don't know what it means. Okay. If they're in love with this kid, they're in love with the kid. But this is where, when you have grown-ups evaluating talent for long periods of time, and I mentioned Philadelphia, they changed coaches like Sox, quarterbacks like Sox. They've been in a couple of Super Bowls since the last time we went to one. They've been to two and won one. And Atlanta, they came close. They had the same quarterback forever. But Mike Smith, we go through all the coaches they've been through there. You know, instability in ownership where they have an itchy trigger finger to make, big changes, that never happens here. I mean, that's just not the way it rolls where you were sitting the other night where the media is yelling, bring back the Chiefs puffs, because the media has been there from the beginning. The coaches, everybody's been there since the beginning of time. Places like Atlanta, they made a decision 4 months ago that they just scrap. That doesn't happen much around here. It really doesn't.
It wasn't even 4 months ago. It was 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago. I mean, none of the comparisons that you just laid out there to me, I'm flabbergasted by that. But that anyone listening right now doesn't really care about that. They want to know about the Ravens. And I think, to continue what I was talking about, weird thing with Atlanta aside, so many quarterbacks going early. The first 14 picks being offensive players. I mean, imagine that. I mean, just let that marinate. We knew that this was a more offense heavy draft at the top. Eric DaCosta confirmed as much when he was asked about it after the end of the first round. But I think for me, the selection of Nate Wiggins, cornerback from Clemson, I think this was what the Ravens felt would be the best cross-section between value and talent where they were picking at 30th without trading up. And we know the Ravens have not been a team that's traded up very often, unless you're talking about a quarterback or very rare instances. So if you're staying put at 30, you saw the offensive line board in terms of really those first round guys that were worthy of being first round picks and not trying to reach for second round value. It was pick clean. You know, I said it all along. There's going to be a run on offensive linemen, and even the Jordan Morgans of the late first round could be gone by the time the Ravens pick. And that's exactly how it played out. So I think understanding that and also acknowledging we have, if you're the Ravens, you're saying we have two outside corners on the roster that we trust. One is Marlon Humphrey, who's coming off of an injury plague season and is very expensive and probably one more so-so season away from at least getting the Ronnie Stanley treatment. And Brandon Stevens is the other one who's entering a contract year. After that, no established depth, no one that you really trusted. So that's where Nate Wiggins makes perfect sense in terms of one, giving you some more immediate depth on the outside and allowing you to move chess pieces around a little bit more, which we know Zach Orr is going to want to do that in a way very similar to Mike McDonald. And two, Nate Wiggins very clearly has long-term starter upside. I don't think he's going to start week one, but I think he's going to be in the mix. And I think it's very well possible by the time we reach week 12 that maybe he is a starter, or certainly by next season he's a starter, not knowing if Stevens or Humphrey are definitively going to be on this roster. So I think this was an appropriate cross-section between a need. Corner would have been not my biggest need, because I think it's still offensive line, and we're going to see how that plays out. But clearly, it's in the next, that next tier, second or third biggest need they had. So it addresses a need. And I think with Nate Wiggins, you look at the talent. He's a skinny guy, but, 6'1", fast as can be, good cover guy on an island. I think the one question is, playing with a little more tenacity, a little more physicality. I think he's capable of doing that, but he's just lighter. He's not 21 years old yet. So there's a lot of projectable traits here and a lot to like about Nate Wiggins. So, and I think you look at the Ravens' history at the cornerback position in the first round. This is the first time they've drafted a corners in the first round since Marlon Humphrey, but go back. Dwayne Starks, that was a hit. Chris McAllister, that was a major hit. You're talking about a Ring of Honor talent level guy, whether he's in it or not. Go down the list. Jimmy Smith, that was a hit, even though he never became an all-pro corner because of injuries. And Marlon Humphrey, who's been a three-time Pro Bowl corner. So the track record in selecting corners in the first round is right up there with any other position that the Ravens have had success with in the first round. So I think this makes a lot of sense. And like I said, to me, it was a really logical cross section between a need and I think really good value. I think a lot of people, if you look at a lot of the different rankings, whether you're talking about ESPN, Pro Football Focus, NFL.com, whatever pundit you like to subscribe to, I think Nate Wiggins was the kind of guy that very much was in that top 20 to 25 at the very least. So from that standpoint, the Ravens got good value. So I think they always are going to say they love their pick, but looking at their body language, tone in their voice, all of that, I think they were really happy with what they came away with, considering the O-line board had really been picked clean by the time they picked at 30th.
Well, I was out there the night Ed Reed. I actually have the picture. It was an interesting shadow behind me in that photo. But when they drafted Ed Reed, famously, and I was on the inside of all of that, right? Like, I'm at the barn the next night with all the scouts eating ice cream, crab cakes, the whole deal. I have a picture of that as well. And I remember Ben basically saying he was the only one we could pick. That was the last guy that we had. And that worked out okay. And in this particular case, in praise of DaCosta and their history and their pedigree in doing this, to your point, picking not just cornerbacks, but picking sort of in that position that It would have been very easy for them to back up, right? I'm sure they could have found a dance card of some kind with some kind of value if they didn't like the player and they wanted to back up into the 30s and pick up picks or pick up a one next year. They're not allergic to any of that. If they have a metric for all of that, and they could have taken a couple offensive linemen in the 40s that they like or wherever it would have been. I find it interesting the offensive line got picked clean, and you and I have spent and look, we're getting together at Fadley's later. There'll be a whole weekend. They're going to pick linemen. They'll probably have one by the time I get home with my shrimp salad from Fadley's this afternoon, right? By the time a first pitch happens against the Oakland A's. It won't happen that quick, right? As we found out, it'll happen half as quick in the second round. But I would just say for them, the offensive line thing and how others valued it, right, and said the board is picked clean and we'll just go to the next level of offensive linemen. This still remains to be – we spent a lot of oxygen here the last 6 months talking offensive linemen, even back into the season when it was like, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? They have a lot of veterans. They have a lot of money, Ronnie Stanley. And as we sit here – day two, and people can hear this over the weekend, and I'm sure they'll take more offensive linemen, but it did lay a little interesting the way all of it. And I know I spent a lot of oxygen just talking about the quarterback thing and the Falcons and all that, but that did really lay some groundwork for what happened with offensive linemen. And I do believe DaCosta when they said we didn't think he would be there, because I don't think you thought, or people who really study this. By the way, Mel looked good the other day. It gave me some warm fuzzies. I've had great moments with Mel. So I watch ESPN and watch their broadcast, but always hometown pride for Mel. But I don't think anybody thought that he would be there, right? This is a little bit of a shocking thing.
I don't think it's a Kyle Hamilton being available when the Ravens picked 2 years ago level of shock. Because I think a lot of people, and I think the Ravens, they've said this again, truths, half-truths, darn lies. We know all that with all these teams talking about their drafts, even the Falcons right now. But I think with Hamilton, there was an overwhelming feeling around the, at least let's say the NFL draft world, not necessarily just the 30. He was a top five kind of player. For him to fall middle of the first round, I think a lot of people were shocked by. So I don't think this was quite at that level. I think you saw your share of mock drafts that had Nate Wiggins going to the Ravens. It's not like that was impossible. But I do think when you look at the O-line, when you look at even Tyler Guyton and Jordan Morgan, those were the two guys that I think a lot of fans were kind of looking at and saying, okay, there's probably a good chance one of those guys will be available when the Ravens pick at 30. And maybe they even – with one of those guys available, maybe they'd still try to move back to early in the second round. So again, it gets picked clean, but if one position group gets picked clean, you look and see what's left. And again, cornerback, while it wasn't their biggest need, it absolutely was the need. I mean, you go back and look at my roster assessment at BaltimorePositive.com, where I just kind of took stock of where they were. I did that Monday or Tuesday of this week. I had corner as like their second or third highest need. I put my concern level at low, moderate, high, or I put like moderate/high. I had corner as moderate/high because they just didn't have any depth behind Humphrey and Stevens. So you need at least three outside corners. I mean, you do. You really do. This allows you now to move Marlon Humphrey inside. You can move some chess pieces around. You've got a depth piece with really significant upside here.
It also makes Kyle Hamilton better. It makes all of them better.
Sure, exactly. I mean, you want good football players. And we've talked about this a lot in the secondary. I mean, one of the analytics, it's not even an analytics idea necessarily. I think it's just a football, and I think it's a scheme idea of what you're seeing in today's day and age is you want positionless defensive backs. And what I mean by that is what we see with the Ravens, moving guys around. I mean, Kyle Hamilton, we see him line up in the slot more than he's lined up as a traditional safety. He plays in the box. He's lined up on the edge. He plays linebacker. I mean, he moves all the way around. Marlon Humphrey, outside corner, inside corner, guy who can blitz, they still have Arthur Millette, who they brought back. So they have a lot of chess pieces, but again, the outside corner depth was very light. I mean, Jalen Armour Davis, we're two, going to be 3 years into that, and we still don't know what the Ravens have with him because he hasn't been able to stay healthy on the field. So I think this made a lot of sense in that regard. And the other thing you have to remember, and this lends itself to what you were mentioning a little bit, when you're trying to look at a draft, I think it's really easy to kind of just look at each pick in isolation. And, you know, even with some of the jargon that's just used and the cliches and best player available. Well, yeah, it's best player available, but you're also trying to address your needs. Again, you want a cross-section of filling needs, but getting proper value for that pick. And that's why the Ravens didn't look at the next offensive lineman, who they probably have an early second round grade on, and then just say, oh, we're going to take that guy because of what Eric DaCosta said after night one, which was, in looking at the draft, we try to evaluate where the pockets of position players are going to go at different points in the draft, right? We always know there's going to be a run on quarterbacks in the first round. This year was an extreme example of that, but that was your very first run at a certain position group. So in looking at this, and it would have been interesting to see if they had still taken Nate Wiggins, if Jordan Morgan had been there, if Tyler Guyton had still been there. I mean, we don't know exactly how the Ravens felt about those players, but they clearly were offensive line prospects that would have filled positions that are wide open for them right now. But in assessing and looking at their, you know, with some of their analytics guys, looking at and anticipating where the pockets of different position groups are going to go over the course of, you know, really the whole draft, there was a thought, and Eric DaCosta expressed this, and I think it makes sense when you kind of look at how the draft prospects were ranked by various pundits. His thought was, we want to come away in this draft clearly with offensive line help, clearly wanted to add a corner, and I think wide receiver is still in that ballpark, even though I don't think they were hot and bothered about getting a receiver in the first round. But in assessing and projecting where these players were going to go, how much draft depth there was at these positions, there was the thought that if we want to get an impactful corner, more likely to find that in the first round than second, third round guys that we think can make an impact early on, right? And of course, a first round guy is always going to be better than a second or third round guy. In looking at the offensive line, he thought there was a better chance if they were going to go corner in the first round that they can still find impact talent in the second and third round at the O-line when they're going to be picking, which is the end of those rounds. Now, we're going to have to see how it plays out. And again, as someone's listening to this over the weekend, they'll have a better idea than you and I right now. But if the board ends up getting picked clean when they're picking in the second round and the third round at offensive line, then uh-oh, then you're looking at that a little bit differently. And you're looking at that from a more consequential standpoint as it pertains to your 2024 roster. But if Nate Wiggins was clearly higher on the board than the next couple offensive linemen that they had, which were presumably second round grades, middle of the second round, whatever they might be, then from a value standpoint, this made a lot more sense because it is a position of need. Is it as drastic or as immediate of a need as O-line? No, but it's still a need. Again, you don't go into a season with two outside corners that you trust on your roster. I mean, they needed to replace that Ronald Darby spot that he held down last year. And this kid clearly is much younger, he's faster, way more upside. They feel he can step in and be a starter. Probably, like I said, I don't expect it to be week one, barring an injury, but he's going to be in the mix. And if you look at him historically, the Ravens,
dude, he's going to get 30 snaps on opening day if he's healthy, right?
I mean, yeah, 25, 30, something.
You better hope. He's a one, right? I mean,
well, no, you don't think about it like that, though. You got see, that's where you run into problems if you're thinking about it like that. I mean, he's got to compete and show that he's ready, but you have Marlon Humphrey, who's a three-time Pro Bowl corner, and Brandon Stevens, who was their most dependable, consistent, above-average corner last year. So I think you're right in the sense that if they're laying it out right now, yeah, they want him to be part of their sub-packages and maybe rotate your corners a little bit like they did with Jimmy Smith and Brandon Carr 5 years ago. But he's got to show it. So, but the good news is when you are talking about corners in the first round and you look at the Ravens historically, Dwayne Starks was not necessarily a week one number one corner. Chris McAllister didn't start until, I don't know if it was midway through
Wayne Starks
99,
went to
but it
school one
was.
day with Jimmy Smith. You can look that up. I was here with that.
Yeah. I mean, but the point again, those guys didn't come in and start immediately. Jimmy Smith did not start. Jimmy Smith looked like a bust until the end of his second year in the NFL. Marlon Humphrey rotated in his rookie year. So I'm not at all of the thought that Nate Wiggins is just going to be handed a starting job. I mean, they have two starting outside corners. This gives them depth. This gives them more versatility. And obviously this gives them high-end starter upside as it pertains to not just later in 2024, but really 2025 and beyond. And again, the draft is not just about filling a need for the short term. The draft is about maximizing value for the long term. And that's where I think Nate Wiggins was a pretty good cross-section, at least in the Ravens' mind. And we'll have to see how it plays out. You know, he's highly regarded, but you never really know until they get to the next level. He does have to fill out a little bit. I mean, he's light. You know, he played at 175 pounds, I think he was listed at Clemson last year, at 6'1". I mean, he's very lean. So, you know, from a physicality standpoint, you know, that's something he's going to have to adjust to. I think, you know, one knock on him that I think you saw from different draft types was maybe needs to be a little meaner, a little more of a dog in him, so to speak, from a run support standpoint. Ravens will teach him that. If he has that in him, they will bring that out in him. There's no doubt. But
he weighs 175 pounds.
He's got to fill out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got to fill out. And I think if you look at his frame, look at his 40 time. I mean, this kid flies. You know, I mean, all of that. I think there's projectable upside here to say.
And he's real young. He's real young.
Yeah. He's not even 21 yet. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So I think, again, every team loves their pick on draft night. I mean, even if they don't, they're selling that they love their pick. I genuinely believe seeing and hearing Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh that they were really pleased in terms of making the best out of, okay, ideally, I think offensive line was the no-brainer position that they wanted to come away with. But with the way the board fell, they didn't feel that any of those prospects warranted moving up. And again, they so rarely do that. But they thought that Nate Wiggins was a great enough prospect when they were picking at 30 to warrant not trading back. And DaCosta did say the phones did ring. And typically most years he'll say whether they ring or not. Other years he's said, well, the phones didn't ring. He said they did, but they felt they were getting the best cover corner in the draft in Nate Wiggins. And we'll see how it plays out. But certainly, again, from a value standpoint, it checks the box. This doesn't feel like a player they would have reached. Unlike, as I said, if they had taken the next offensive lineman on the board, to me, that would have looked like might have reached a little bit there to satisfy a need. But like I said, this was, to me, a good compromise between best player available, maximizing value, and also wasn't their biggest need, but it was number two or number three on the list at most, or at worst.
All right, so today's the day I get to tell this story because you're bleary-eyed. You've been up all night, and we used to. And the 25th anniversary documentary's out, and Eric DaCosta is widely featured, as are the scouts and all the things we used to do back in the day. And there's a piece in there where I'm holding envelopes in the 25th anniversary documentary. That piece was over at Putty Hill Station, so that's probably 2004, 2005, based on my documentation of Deion Sanders and Cordell Stewart being there and Jim Fossil, amongst others. But I used to do a thing with Phil Savage and Brian Billick, and I almost think it was Billick's idea. Like, I'll have to ask him that on the Friday before the draft, it was like the day before Christmas, if you would go to the old building and then the early days of the castle. And I did it in both buildings because I remember where everybody's offices were. I walked through the building one by one with an envelope, desk by desk. Terry McDonough, I'll give you all the names. Joe Douglas participated for sure. But Vince Newsom participated every year. Eric DaCosta participated every year. Joe Ortiz participated every year. George Kokinas participated every year. I'm just thinking of the names. So I would go to them on Friday and walk into their office and say, I want you to write down. This is a good idea for Ryan Mink in the lounge, Garrett Downing. I would walk in and say, write down on a sheet of paper and lock it like David Copperfield in my 25th anniversary video. Lock it down. And then on Monday, we're going to unearth it during the show, which is exactly what I did with DaCosta when we're holding those envelopes. And everybody will put their name on the outside of the, and they're all Ravens letterhead that came out of their desk. So they would write down on a sheet of paper the player they thought they would get, not who they wanted, what they really thought that the idea was. you're picking, they were always picking in the 20s, like literally. The years I did it, I'm trying to think of who they picked or where they picked it. One year they picked a Courtney Upshaw, like they picked in the 40s or something. You know, wherever they picked late. But it's always interesting to see who they coveted and who they could get. And one year everybody nailed it, and one year nobody nailed it. And I had a whole Travis LeBoy. I'm just going through the names on those sheets in my mind because I'm Mary Lou Henner about all this. So whatever year that was, there were names that they loved that they didn't get. And it was a fascinating case study in that when you're picking 30, literally when Eric DaCosta went to bed on Friday night, that was the whole exercise. The whole exercise is who do you think you're going to get and who do you get? And the fans, the reason the exercise was so interesting is fans would sit here and guess. And, you know, we'd all mock. This was 20 years ago, mock drafting, when before we all had websites, before you had a MySpace, young man, and would mock draft. But this is the fun and games we used to play around here before you had a press credential and I didn't. And it's fascinating to think at 30 what they really thought was going to happen, because that's the whole game we're playing here today, right? The whole game we're playing here is wonder if they had this, if Dykeman, you know, whatever guys were there, if this guy was gone and how would they go? If somebody dipped in and said, we want a quarterback, we're willing to give you a one next year for the 30. Whether that's attractive to them, I bet it would have been. In this organization, it would have been.
Yeah, I think so. Especially if that team was going to pay a premium for what that pick would be worth to get a quarterback. But when you have that many quarterbacks go as early as they did, you know, I mean, Bo Nix. I mean, you know, Penix was certainly. You know, I like Penix, and when we were even talking about the Falcons, I don't dislike him. I hate the fit because what are you doing? But yeah, when you don't have that quarterback that's there, like the Ravens back in 2018, when Lamar Jackson's sitting there at the end of the first round, and the Ravens came back in and got him. You know, so that scenario did not present itself, but I'm sure that was something that would have been attractive to them. Again, depending on how the board was going to play out, so I think they did well for themselves. I think they're genuinely excited about Nate Wiggins, and you know, he's like I said, he's got some, you know, he's got to fill out a little bit. That's something that's going to happen over the next couple of years, but. What ran a 4.28 40, really impressive cover traits on the outside, which is not an easy thing to do. I mean, when you're on the outside, you've got to cover. You know, when you're a slot player, when you're a safety, when you're a linebacker, when you're playing on in the middle of the field, there are things a team can do schematically to help you out. But when you're on the outside, you got to cover people at least a large chunk of the time, right? And I think they feel Nate Wiggins can be that kind of guy. And again, I think there's a confidence level, and we'll see how it's going to play out. That, but I think they felt they were more likely to be able to find offensive line talent rounds 2 and 3 that can still help them right away, compared to if they had taken an O lineman and then trying to find a corner in round 2 or 3 that was going to be able to help them right away. So again, we have to see how it plays out. You're at the end of the day, unless you're trying to trade up and you're willing to forfeit future trade value or draft value, which we know the Ravens love their picks, whether it's later in this weekend's draft or next year. But you know, you're still at the mercy of the board's going to fall, and yeah, we'll see how it was. But short of moving up again, I don't think there were any offensive linemen at 30 where you would sit there and say, wow, that was a steal. I think if anything, the Ravens would have been reaching at least a little bit. And that's generally not what you want to do in a big picture sense. And I think that's why the Ravens have been as good drafting as they've been over the course of their existence in staying true to the board and really trying to maximize value. That's why I said I think Nate Wiggins was a good cross section of that. And also still coming away with a player that was very much a need, even if it wasn't their biggest need for 2024. As Ozzie Newsome used to say, I guess he said it after they went through the years of Asa Jackson, Shockey Brown, and Rashawn Melvin. And, you know, thinking back to that 2014 year where they just were ravaged by injuries. From that point on, Ozzie said, you can never have enough corners. And I think Eric DaCosta was certainly thinking that as they turned in, you know, made the call and they turned in their card for Nate Wiggins.
All right, so I'm looking at the draft picks of these years. It was Ben Grubbs that most of the scouts nailed. And that was a late-ish pick, kind of, sort of, right? But they loved him. Yeah, you know, like, and they thought that was the guy. They thought we need an offensive lineman. He'll be there. Mark Clayton was one that a lot of them got right. The one that I think they all got wrong was the year we took Suggs and Bowler, because
they wanted Leftwich.
In a whole different way, Suggs was not supposed to be there at all. He had the incident out in the gym, and he fell a little bit, and that was the weird Minnesota running up to the board year. Like, all of the weirdness happened that year. So in the middle of all of this, it's, again, dude, 2 points for me, and I was there, and John Ogden handed me the first hat in 96 in New York. I'll just say this. We talk about it for months and months and months, and they always show you what they really think on draft night. So we stop the guessing and we see what they valued. And then it's up to reporters with access like you and not for me anymore to ask them why, and say, you know, make that clear to me. And I think the other part of this with the draft is the unpredictability of what everybody in front of you, or even with somebody behind you. I mean, the whole Penix thing was about like somebody dealing up. And I remember the year Phil Savage, I mean, there. Look, Phil and Ozzy and the organization got real sideways when Savage lied to get a draft pick out of the Haloti Ngata deal. Pissed everybody off, like he was going to take. He took some stiff.
Isn't it Cameron Wimbley? I think it was.
Yeah. Camerian. It's
Camerian, Cameron, whatever it was.
Right. Yeah, it was like a weird thing that went on, but there's all of that in a bag of donuts about liars and bluffing and playing poker and all of that. That if you're picking 30 and you're Eric DaCosta and you went to bed, you really, the whole point is, even he didn't know who he was going to pick. Like, literally, it's that intriguing on the inside. And by the way, speaking of the inside, I'm just waiting for Bo Smolka or Jeff Zryback or one of these reporters who always seems to know that, like, the baseball and football thing are tied together. And I know DaCosta, he doesn't talk to anybody anymore. But it is factual that Eric DaCosta had a meal with John Angelos and told John Angelos, you should hire Mike Elias and Sig Majdal and hire those guys because they're geniuses. And I know this because Eric DaCosta was the one that told me who Mike Elias was and told me all about it, all that was going on. And it's fascinating. The baseball guys were in the dugout, weren't they? They were in the war room, huh?
They were. I mean, they weren't coming down to the media room to say hello to us, but they were there. Yeah, they were. And
why do these guys hate the media so much? Like, I like everything about my video and the tweet. It used to be like decent. And there's nobody here that's ever been crossed by a media member or put a knife in their back or written lies or AI'd their fake voices or their principles at the, like, it's fascinating to me, the hatred and the disdain and the distance that is set up between the media. Like, they're in the building. Why wouldn't they come down and wave to you? They're in first place. Yeah. Hey, guys, take a bow. Talk about how cool it is that but then again, Chad Steele and Greg Bader are running the place, and we don't even have a press credential tonight for the baseball game because you have to cover the draft. So what do I know? But it just seems so sensible to me. Like, the nice guy awards seem sensible until the Orioles stop participating. So they're together. This is a great story. I'm giving it to everybody to write it because it's true and it's awesome. It's an awesome story.
Right. One last thing I just want, because you brought this up in passing, and I want to go back to the point I made about pockets and where you're thinking players are going to be when you have picks in the draft. Part of this, when you're trying to project this out, when you take Nate Wiggins and you're saying, okay, there's still offensive linemen. We know this is a very deep offensive line draft. Second and third round now. All those teams that took offensive linemen, offensive tackles, guards, whatever, in that first round are probably not taking another one in round two and round three. So now you have this information that you say, there are still guys we like at the end of the second round. There's still guys we like at the end of the third round. And teams A through H have already plucked an offensive lineman in the first round. You know what? And we know the teams that did what. Those teams are now way less likely to be competing with the Ravens for those players at the end of the second round and the end of the third round. So that's part of it, too. Again, we think about it in terms of, well, you're picking at 30th, you're picking at 62nd, you're picking 93rd, you're picking 113, et cetera. But there's it's a puzzle. It's more like a puzzle. And you're kind of looking at this and you say, how are we ranking our players? What combinations of players do we think we can get based on where they're going to be, based on how our board sets up? And I think that was another factor here. But to go back to your Mike Elias, Sigma Idel point, yeah, I mean, it's cool. You know, it's definitely cool. Teams are paranoid. I mean, and honestly, paranoia persists in more and more in every walk of life. And to your point about an AI situation, sometimes it's justified, but it's something that is a cool story. Yeah, it'd be fun to hear them talk about it a little more, but it is what it is.
How many
is,
people
I
are in the press room?
The stock answer that
I don't know anymore because I'm not allowed to be there, and you're eating cheese curls on behalf of both of us. So please have an extra hot dog on my behalf. How many people literally are in that room at midnight?
That
aren't cheerleaders, because they stock the room with cheerleaders now. Oh, and I'm not talking about people under employee of the team. That, you know, I'm talking about people like you, Jeff. Are there 15 reporters there? 20 reporters?
Yeah.
There?
Yeah, I mean, you know, between the radio, print, and television, I mean, there were 20. I mean, it's, you know, it was late. I mean, think about it. Even for the TV folks, you know, they did their sports broadcast at what, 20 after 11? I mean, the Ravens were just about on the clock at that point in time. So, you know, I didn't send out the WNST text. 11:30 was my cutoff. My logic with that was anyone who was still awake is in front of the TV watching it. Anyone who was asleep probably didn't want to get a text message at 11:40 about the pick. So for anyone who, that was my editorial decision. 11:30 was my cutoff for the 30th overall pick, and it came a few minutes after that. So, but yeah, there were reporters, and you know, it was a long night. But again, like I said, I think I've covered enough drafts to kind of feel like I have a decent idea of at least if they're really happy or whether they're kind of disappointed and the board got picked clean and they didn't really love the player that was there, you know, or they liked the player, but they would have liked to pick him later. You know, I think this was a case of really feeling good about making the best of the situation that they were in, which was O-line was kind of cleaned out as far as guys that they probably had on their top 25. So Wiggins, who, again, to me was a consensus top 20, top 25 player when you look at most of the draft rankings out there. I think they felt they got good value, and I think they felt that wasn't their biggest need, but it was definitely a need that they needed to address, not just for this year from a depth standpoint, but wanting a guy that can step into a starting role as early as later this year or certainly next year.
All right, man, get some rest. We got crab cakes to eat. We got baseball to watch. We got Oakland A's to swap. We got Yankees to get ready for. We got the second round. We got the third round. We got celebrity presenters and warm, fuzzy stories and cancer survivors and little children and former players and alumni and Detroit hungover. And I don't know. What else do we have? Spring will be springing, right? Beautiful weather. Yankees in town. Once you get a little bit of rest on Sunday or Monday and gas back up, I mean, we got a hell of a baseball series coming next week. So rest up. Today is the day, Luke Jones, and I'm going to introduce you to the mac and cheese at Fadley's. So our 25th anniversary documentary is out. I didn't even ask you about that. You know what we're going to do at Fadley's today? We're going to talk about 25th anniversary documentary. That's what we're going to do today. So rest up. Make sure you watch it. It's 36 minutes and 36 seconds long. And the reason for that is, and Luke, you've known me a long time, you know 36 is my favorite number, right? And it turned out to just be that. It was actually 36, 38 with the credits. And I told Greg, and he pulled the credits back by 2 seconds a frame. So we got the 36, 36. And he said, why 36? And he's like, no one famous wore 36. And I'm like, I did. I wore 36 in Little League. So 36 was the number. So at Fadley's, we're going to be giving away the Pac-Man scratch-offs. I still have a big batch of these left. I gave a bunch of these away up at Greenmount Station. They were lucky tickets because we won on Wednesday, barely. And we were at Greenmount Bowl with one of the great, great horse racing conversations about the history in one segment, and then the future. And it's way different than the history. Like, I've been doing horse racing 40 years, as the documentary would show you. I didn't put any of those Preakness pictures into the documentary. That'll be, I have a sense of humor, but not that deep. Our friends at Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter have supported our 25th anniversary and the magical purple and orange cupcake here. We are very appreciative of that as well. And if you participated in the 420 sale last week and the point of sale thing, get over there before the end of the day and take care of getting your move and getting the balms and the things that I need to take care of as well. Luke and I are going to be hanging on Friday at Fadley's. We're going to hang every Friday, which is 2 weeks from now as well, doing what we do. Tharu Vignaraj is going to join us. Leonard Raskin's going to join us. I hope that you join us for the shrimp salad, the crab cakes. They have beer. They have ice cold beer at a reasonable price at Fadley's, New Lexington Markets. Come on down. Our friends at Liberty Pure and Jiffy Lube getting us out on the road. It has been a long, hard March and April, but the 25th anniversary documentary's out. Go enjoy that. A lot of great stuff out in the vault at Baltimore Positive. Susan Fornoff, Jason Turbo, great authors, writers. Mari Brown came on this week. John Eisenberg talking about the history of Oriole baseball. And the NFL draft. Busy times around here. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, hold on behalf of my Pac-Man friends. Waka, 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 way. Positive.